morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Every day's a brand new morning since the morning you moved in. Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Good morning, friend.
Yes, I'm feeling like a million since I got you.
Of a whole with different feelings to evolve, giving distinction to the role, different players, different strokes.
But let me tell you about one thing I know, everybody's got a seed to sow. Let your heart of hearts take you down the road. Everybody's got a seed to sow.
Yeah, we've been talking about seeds, a lot of tomato seeds for the last half hour, it seems like, on the Weekend Gardener, various things about tomatoes. Gerald Adams is with us, who's our resident tomato guru. And we've also got a lovely lady from Lee County, Amanda Bratcher, who we were so glad that Bill Stone, the extension director in Lee County, call me one or email me, I guess, and said, would you like to have our horticulture person come be on your show? And yeah, absolutely. And you've just been so good.
You're
smart. I mean, all of the extension people have to be smart because it's such a tough job.
Yeah, I get all sorts of crazy questions.
And what kind of questions are you getting? Because, you know, things usually look really rough, our plants,
yes,
this time of year, but they don't look as rough this year because it's been cool. It has been very humid and hot,
yeah,
but they don't seem to be as broken down as they usually do in my yard.
Yeah, with the weather, with us having all that wet weather early in the season, it really helped kind of charge, you know, the groundwater and made sure to get everybody off to a good start. So I think the summer has, at least from that standpoint, having that early rain has helped with a lot of the drought stress. And in fact, there's only two places in North Carolina right now that the climate office rates are even in a moderate or a mild drought, and that's around the Gaston County, Mecklenburg County, Cleveland County area over in the west, and then in Pamlico, Beaufort, and part of Craven counties. But the rest of the state is actually not in a drought situation, which it's been years since we've been able to say that at the beginning of August. That being said, I think right now, because after we had that wet weather, we had those heat index values at the end of June that were just brutal, you know, for a few weeks, for a couple weeks. And then we've had a pretty consistently warm July, and we've gotten a lot less rain in July, but we've still gotten rain, just less of it. And I'm starting to get phone calls again of just kind of droughts or heat stress. So plants that have probably been weakened over the last few years from all of the drought stress and heat stress, you know, the conditions this year, they're starting to give up. And so people are bringing me pictures of half dead plants, of plants that have succumbed and dropped all their leaves to different fungal pathogens, plants that have maybe had planting stress a few years ago are now just starting to die because July was hot. And so that typically, if a plant is stressed out and ready to go, that will tip it over the edge. So I've given a lot of terminal diagnoses to a lot of people's plants, and then we were talking, Gerald and I, a lot of foliar pathogens, so some of the leaf blights and leaf spots, I've seen those popping up, and then people's vegetables getting tired. You know, this time of year, if you planted your vegetables back in, mid to late April, now's a great time to kind of replant your summer garden, so to speak, because we still have another, 3 months of growing that we can probably get in. So a lot of our warm season vegetables, now's a great time to replant those to kind of start that production over again.
Gerald and Rufus, let me go to Rufus. What would you like to tell the people?
Don't ask me anything like that, by the way. speaking of Sanford, every time I go to the farmer's market, I run across Senator Bill, former Senator Bill Staton's son. And I think Mike has said he had something to do with radio over the years in Sanford.
I'm not sure.
Bill Staton's son. As sure as I walk anywhere in the farmer's market, I will see him. And he's a great friend, a great patron of the Weekend Gardener.
Oh, wonderful.
And what I would like to tell people is, don't despair just because it's this time of year.
Right.
People say, oh, my yard looks so bad, so bad, so bad. Well, that's nature. And still, when you've got something that a lot of people like to leave their stalks from perennials still on the stalk, I cut them back because you don't have to have ugly if you don't want ugly. And the biggest complaint I have is people not understanding about pruning roses. And I just have a very simple method. When the bud dies, go down to the next four leaves. And Gerald and Amanda, that seems to work for me.
Yes, sir.
And I get about three blooms a year.
Yes. Thank you,
and
goodness.
Maybe four. You can get about four with a knockout.
Yeah, if you're a diligent pruner and you're cleaning off those and you're deadheading, that's that process is cleaning off the dead or spent blossoms. You know, you're signaling to that plant, hey, don't spend energy making seeds. You know, you've cut the flowers off, so they're not going to dedicate any sugars or anything to creating seeds. They're going to go, hey, crap, I need to make seeds. I need to make more flowers to make more seeds. So they're going to reflush another round of flowers to try and make some offspring. So when you're cutting off those flowers, you're encouraging more blooming. And if you're diligent about it, you're really helping that plant conserve energy to put on more flowers because they're not sending sugars to try and start making seeds. Now, the trade-off, and this is where people kind of get hung up, is, and this is where it's really, you know, up to the gardener to be diligent and also conscientious. You know, some people are like, but I want to give seeds to my birds. You know, a lot of things in the aster family, like the sunflowers and the black-eyed Susans, a lot of the finches and other songbirds love their seeds. So, you know, if you want your plants to support your birds, you know, there is, you know, maybe the second or third time of flowering, leave the seeds that time, you know, so they get a few seeds. That being said, too, just know if you are leaving seeds standing in your garden, some of those things will reseed around your garden and can be kind of obnoxious. Now, they're not invasive. If they're native, they're not going to be invasive, but they can be aggressive and aggressive reseeders. I have a few of those in the pollinator garden that I have to be a diligent gardener and go, okay, you can't set seed. Because it'll fall off everywhere and make a mess.
Everywhere.
Melissa always waits with the bee balm. She waits for the birds to get the seeds because, you know, the finches and all. And so that's a good practice. So watch what's happening in your garden because you'll see a lot of neat things in there and some, you know, beautiful birds. Speaking of which, folks at Wild Birds Unlimited have, you know, we have squirrels too, and they're interesting to watch. But you know, they don't mix with the with the bird feeders very well. They're trying to survive, get a seed here and there. So if you want to win a squirrel proof bird feeder, you've come to the right place. This month, you have a chance to win one from our friends at Wild Birds Unlimited in Cary and Raleigh, along with some of their famous no-mess seed. Enter and win this Wild Birds Unlimited squirrel-proof bird feeder by clicking on the rotating banner at WPTF.com or go to our contest page to enter at WPTF.com. Now, I know you're trying to get out of bed right now, but if you've picked up your phone, see if you can pick it up and open it and go to WPTF.com and look for that rotating banner. It's not going to take a lot of effort, and you can just wait while your coffee's brewing. And or yeah, I know it's that kind of day where people get up late on Saturday mornings and it's sleepy outside. Rufus doesn't like getting up real early on Saturday mornings either, does he?
Well, I told people I do two things: go to bed early and get up. but now this morning, I got to bed about 10 o'clock last night. I behaved myself.
Good.
Got up and had a nice breakfast about 6 o'clock at the Holiday Inn here. And oh, by the way, Amanda, milkweed.
Yes.
If I did hit milkweed, would it come back like tall flocks?
Some of them will. So I know that in the common milkweed, Asclepias syriacus, sometimes will flower again. But a lot of times, most of them are one and dones. Butterfly weed, Asclepias tuberosa, that's the orange one that folks typically grow, it can reflush two or three times in a season, depending on whether it's deadheaded. But yeah, I'd be very cautious about expecting another flush of blooms on those guys. I'd treat them as maybe a one or two.
Yeah. Okay.
How about then? Well,
I've got our Asclepias tuberosa. I've actually seen it reflower pretty reliably twice in a year, and it really depends. The timing of it depends on the weather. We're going through a reflush right now in the garden, and it made a huge flush of flowers in April, and the seeds are just now starting to open, but it's now put on a new flush of growth, and there's flower buds just starting to form. So we should be getting some flowers just in time for maybe the second round of monarchs, which in North Carolina should be coming back through about the first to second week in September. Is the estimated time that they come back through.
All right, we'll take a break and come back. I want to ask Gerald a little bit about lawns. I know people this time of year, fescue lawns are just crying.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up. We're back on WPTF. Mike Rayleigh here on the Weekend Gardener. Gerald Adams and Amanda Bratcher, Amanda Lee County Horticulture Specialists with the Extension Service. And Gerald is a tomato guru, but Gerald has also been the curator of grounds at the Governor's Mansion and also overseeing that operation at the Centennial Campus, including the Chancellor's residence there, which is quite an undertaking. And you delved into a lot of things, including lawn care. And I know y'all had fescue mostly at the Governor's Mansion, didn't you?
Tall fescue at the Governor's Mansion.
Yeah, that must
that
have
shade,
been
all them giant oak trees and magnolia trees.
Is there a irrigation system there?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to have that for fescue to really be
happy.
It's
got to have an inch of water a week when you're in the summertime, minimum.
Yeah. I have found that out over the years. That's why I have a lot of weeds. However, somebody came by. Melissa was out walking, working in the yard the other day, and a guy came walking by and talked about how pretty the yard was. But then he said he told his landscape guy, I guess they're doing a little design or taking down some trees, doing different things, and he wants it to look like my yard instead of a manicured yard. That was a backhanded compliment. What do you think about that, Rufus? Is that is that a compliment or I don't know? It was nice. It was nice of him to say that. Rufus, are you still with us?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm all here. Huh?
Well, what did you hear the comment? The guy said he wanted a yard like he thought I had a pretty yard, but he wanted it like my yard instead of a manicured yard.
Oh, now you're talking about my yard.
Well, you have certain areas of your landscape that are very manicured, I think. You know, more formal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the wildflower, I'm having fun with that. My first year of that, and I'm going to wait till the fall, everything dies down. Gerald and Manny, you'll have to advise me. Shake the seeds real well, chop all of them up, dig it up a little bit again, and plant more seed. I've learned what grows when. Poppies come early, and I've learned, Gerald, that they don't germinate if there's anything on top of it.
No.
So I didn't know that, and yep. I got a few anyway. I learned that from the lady that we saw, you know, the wonderful gal in
Bree?
Fuquay.
Bree Arthur.
Yeah,
Bree Arthur. And I didn't know.
No, not Bree Arthur. That's the actress.
Bree Arthur.
Bree. Yeah. What a lovely person.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, she was on the show with us last week, and we got to get her back on. She was out at Stuart
Woodwork.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has been disseminating poppy seeds into the community for, gosh, more than a decade. I think I have some seed that I've held over from her. Gosh, yeah, it has to be 15 years old. And I always save a little bit from my garden, a little bit from a couple other people's gardens, and a little bit from hers, and mix the seeds and throw them out every year. So I always have a little bit of, I don't get any kind of weird genetic weirdness.
We need Gerald and Amanda, we need to have y'all, but the next time we go to a rescue wood rehab, it is the most interesting place.
Yes.
They have, if you're interested in wood and all kinds of wood, they have taken it from old barns, they've taken it from big trees that have fallen down somewhere. It's all kinds of wood. It's so beautiful. And they can make things too, but mm-hmm. it's just the most interesting place in Fuquay. We had such a good time. We need to take you all there. Didn't you have a good time, Rufus?
I sure did. It's sort of like Wobble says, if Wobble doesn't have it, you don't need it. Well, if it's wood, they can do it.
Oh yeah. They had the prettiest, and I don't think I have any walnut in my house, but they had planks, these huge that rough cut. That was the most beautiful wood, and it's raw.
Well, the one I saw, Mike, that impressed me was this huge, probably 3x3 cherry tree trunk.
With a slab
that was about 6 inches thick, and it was just—I'd never even thought of a cherry tree that big.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. So we hopefully we'll go back there soon.
Very cool,
Gerald. As we're coming up on news, but when we come back, I want you to talk about the lawns and proper lawn care. People are still dealing with the warm season grasses, which is, if you have sun, that is a
it's your only chance.
It's it's the best way to go.
You will save your sanity.
Yeah, it's probably too late to seed any warm season grasses now, but because we were zipping through this summer.
But it is a good, I always tell folks when they're walking through, this is a great time to plan. If you want to have warm season grasses, dream and plan for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll come back after the news here on WPTF on the Weekend Gardener. All right, we're back on WPTF 933. And we had an interesting discussion off the air about fescue, which we want to talk about, and lawn care in general. We don't talk about it as much as we used to for some reason on this show. But it is a bear to try to grow a fescue lawn in this area, fescue bluegrass. I know Irv, when we first started the show, talked about good mixes have fescue and bluegrass in them. The bluegrass kind of helps fill in. But no matter, the cool season grasses have a tough time in this area because we're kind of a transition area, for one thing, and especially this time of year, Gerald.
too hot and too humid.
Mm-hmm. Too hot.
Yeah.
I mean, you just, if you've got shade in your yard and you want grass, then you're forced to have to use tall fescue. And if you plant tall fescue, you really need an irrigation system because it requires an inch of water a week through the summertime. Now, this June, the good Lord provided that water for you, so you could have got by without an irrigation, but they cut the spigot off when it got to July and turned the temperature up, and it's probably fried now if you didn't have irrigation. Yeah. And then because it doesn't really want to actively grow during our hot, humid summer weather, it's very prone to getting brown patch. So you really have got to preventatively spray fungicides on it, especially in June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. If you've got irrigation, if you can do that, then you have a chance to have a good-looking yard 12 months out of the year with maybe just a little bit of overseeding in September or October. If you don't have irrigation, then you're just rolling the dice every year. You can have it looking good from when you seed it in September till maybe June, and it's always going to be a struggle. June, July, and August just depends upon the weather. And see how the weather was this year. It was a killer, or is a killer, I should say. So that's the ongoing issue with tall fescue. Now, the summer grasses, particularly in the triangle area, you're more likely to see Bermuda and Zoysia. You get down towards the coast, you tend to see more centipede. Much easier to grow. They each have some peculiarities of their own, but they don't require the water in the summer. You can get by without irrigation on those. I think one thing that people miss out, particularly on the Zoysia and the Bermuda, they need to be aerated every year. And if you've got bare spots that you're trying to get fill in, you need to aerate it more than just once, like in May. You need to aerate it every month, May, June, July, because the looser you get that soil, the easier those rhizomes can spread and fill in those bare spots for you. Another thing about the warm season grasses, and especially Bermuda and Zoysia, the more often you cut them, the lower you keep them cut, the more likely they are to spread and run east and west instead of just growing up tall. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's more work, but once again, if you're trying to get it to fill in and get a thicker lawn, that just kind of goes along with the territory.
Yep, it's all a decision, right?
That's right. And there's none of them that are non-work proof. You're going to have, even just getting out and keeping it cut low, fertilizing it. I mean, you've got to do all those things to have a healthy lawn. It's not too late to put down sod for some of the warm season grasses. You've got plenty of time to get it rerooted, but it's too late to do any seed for those.
You made a great point. If you want to have turf grass, it is a maintenance decision. You are not going to go out and go to your big box store, buy a bag of seed, throw it out, and going to have a perfect lawn. Do not get, you know, wrapped up in those beautiful pictures that they have on those bags. It is work. You know, if you have a bare spot, if you have a Bermuda lawn and you got a bare spot, it is so important to get that Bermuda growing in that bare spot, because Mother Nature does not like a vacuum, and if you don't put something there, she will, in the form of some sort of weed.
That's okay. Matt! There's old Matt out there. My engineer Matt from downstairs, TV, he used to be up here. Yeah.
Oh, I just, you know, I do get a lot of questions, especially this time of year, kind of going back to your question earlier about turf, and people just think, oh, you know, they see, you know, so-and-so going to mow their lawn every week, and, you know, it looks so easy, and it's
snow. It is so hard.
It is work. It really is intentional work.
I have a neighbor who just, he works very, very hard to have a fescue lawn.
Yeah.
And he's apparently doing it all right because his lawn looks really nice.
And that is okay. I personally do not choose to manage turf grass in my lawn, but I'm here to support people
me neither.
Who are.
I used to try, but I have so many plants and so many trees and so much root competition and so little sunlight, full sun, 6 hours at least. And I don't care what they say about these these Zoysia lawns, some of these Zoysia varieties, they really would be happy. They would really look a lot better if they had 6 hours.
That's right.
Yeah.
You get less than 6 hours, you're...
It's tough. Although my friend Chip Winston has one of the, I don't know if it's Emerald, maybe, that he has an early, he's had it forever, and it does what it's not supposed to do. It grows in a lot more shade than it, it really should. So once in a while you get that happening, but as a general rule, I've subscribed to the Rufus Edmonston, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson rule that if it's green, that's fine. That's our lawn. You know, I want that.
Well, I'll set you back up, Amanda. If there's a vacant spot, silt grass will find it.
Oh, no.
Well,
yes.
That's another thing. We'll talk about weeds and stuff coming up here on WPTF. It's 9:40. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener. I was talking Rufus about. I was showing Amanda and Gerald a couple of photos, and I was there when I was a little boy in 1960 when Harry Truman was invited to come to Nashville to speak at our Harvest Festival in October of 1960. And Harold Cooley, who was a very powerful congressman, who I know that Rufus met. As old Matt going by again.
That is phenomenal.
So they're on the bandstand, and I guess that the national anthem is playing. It looks like they're kind of at attention, and the national anthem is playing, and Mr. Truman has his hat over his heart. And so that was really something to witness. I remember it vividly for our Harvest Festival. And then there's Luther Hodges, who was the outgoing governor, and Terry Sanford, who was running for governor as a Democrat. All four of those men on that podium up there. And then there's a photo of Harry Truman riding in a car in the parade. And the mayor, Milton Strickland, is driving. And Mr. Cooley is in back. Mr. Truman is standing, and the police chief is riding shotgun. And I look at the picture, and there is another policeman standing on the side, and he was our other policeman. So we had two policemen in Nashville at the time. I don't know. I assume there was Secret Service there, but there wasn't a lot of security. It was a different world. But there's such vivid memories. Such vivid memories, and I don't know, that has nothing to do with anything we're talking about, but I just happened to see that pop up. You know, Apple mm-hmm. phones, and things pop up. So
remember this?
Yeah, absolutely.
We were talking about Japanese stilt grass just as we were
Rufus,
going to break.
Rufus threw something in the mix there,
I just
literally.
Got a text about it.
Did you really?
So you've gotten a lot of folks in Lee County are having problems, huh?
Yeah, you know, and it's been something, it's been an issue for more than a century here in North America because it was used as packing material because it dries down and it's such good packing material to bed stuff in from Asia. So, and unfortunately the seeds came along with it and have spread into our natural areas, and it's a huge issue in shady, wet woodlands, and it will completely colonize an area very quickly, and it'll suffocate a lot of native plants, and deer won't eat it. So it makes the woods look real pretty because it's nice and lush and green, but it is a terrible, terrible nuisance and weed, and it does reduce the diversity of our native plants in the wild areas where it occurs. And I think folks, you know, as folks kind of start to look at their outside and their properties and their gardens and pay more attention. I love working for Extension because a lot of times folks come to me because they find us and they have just started their journey, you know, and they've they find all these new things to them, these novelties to them, and so we're able to help support folks on their learning journey. And so as you start to pay more and more attention to your property, you start to notice things more. And stilt grass is very challenging because, you know, at first, if you're just starting to look at how pretty everything is, it is really rather pretty. But then you start realizing it creeps around, and then it starts to be the only thing you have, and then people start paying attention to it. And thankfully, and Gerald, and please chime in here, but our weed specialist at NC State, Dr. Joe Neal, has a really, really great write-up on stilt grass control that's available through the Extension Publications website.
Is it on Turf Files, or is it a separate?
It's a separate thing. Yeah. If you go to the Google it. NC State Extension with stilt grass control, and it'll be the first thing that pops up. And it's a whole article on only stilt grass control. It talks about weeding. It talks about chemicals you can use. It talks about different strategies you can use to control it on your property. Mm-hmm. Excellent, excellent read.
Yeah. Gerald, do you want to say something about stilt grass?
Roundup, a glyphosate will kill it. Of course, it kills everything else, too. Yeah. So mm-hmm. if it's actually in y'all, I had to use a Claim Extra one time to Ooh. Get rid of it in a loan, but it did the job. Sometimes takes multiple applications, but that's a very expensive herbicide, so it might be out of the range for some homeowners. But you got to get it before it ever seeds. If you let it seed out, there's a gazillion seeds in one plant of it, and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
A lot of people make the mistake to just keep cutting it,
yeah.
and you spread them seeds all over everywhere.
Yeah.
But
and
if you have a lot of shade, it doesn't seem to like shade very much, does
well,
it?
Oh, no, it loves shade.
It'll grow in shade. Super heavy shade, maybe not, but it'll grow in full sun, too.
Mm. Oh,
so
yeah.
therein is the problem
yes.
yeah.
when it gets into your lawn. So you need to... pulling it up is okay if it hadn't seeded out yet, mm-hmm. but if you've let it seed out, you got to get rid of those seeds.
Yeah, and the other scary thing about it is it spreads by root pieces too. So if you're mowing it down, it mm-hmm. can get picked up in your lawnmower mm-hmm. and spread around your property.
Right. Rufus, what would I say about this?
My yard's infested with it, and mm-hmm. I've got beyond the point of trying to control it. I just have to mow it, and I realize that it's green. But, you know, sometimes you just yeah. have to accept things, and it's all over the place. Farmer thinks he can take a weed eater and cut it down. It's gone. It comes right back up, spreads. But I just say this. If you've got it very invasive like I do, I don't think there's any way, Gerald, like you say, with the exception of something very expensive and time-consuming, of controlling it, you just have to continue to live with it and mow it down. I hate to be a give-upper on that, but I am.
Well, you can spot spray it with the Roundup, you know, being very careful to knock it out. That's what I've got an area the back of my house I spray every year. And usually if you catch it before it seeds out, you spray that one time and you're probably okay. But it's unreal how fast
yeah.
it spreads.
I've had very good luck with using Fusilade, which is a grass selective herbicide in my woodland. I don't like spraying herbicides in my woodland, especially because I have orchids out there and things like that, but it'll outcompete my orchids. And so I do use Fusilade 2, which is the active ingredient is Fluazafop, which I love to say, but it's very effective.
Somebody, I don't know if it was Ant, somebody on the show used to say Fluzaflop.
It's a UA, so Fluazafop. But in that article that Joe Neal wrote up, he said that if you have a turf grass, if you have a warm season turf grass and you have Bermuda, and you have stilt grass in it, there has been some efficacy using quinchlorlac in controlling it in Bermuda and warm season turfs, which that is a selective herbicide that can be used to control goose and crabgrass in warm season turfs. But as with all kind of these selective herbicides, you have to read the label and you have to be diligent about it.
And you have to wear the proper clothing and,
yes,
and safety. Representative Howard Penny a couple of weeks ago was on the show from Harnett County. We were at J.E. Wumble, and he was talking about Rufus safety when using chemicals.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
he's a farmer.
There is really nothing that selective to that grass alone, is there, Amanda, Gerald? There's nothing that will just go kill silt grass and nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that will. I mean, the Clean Extra will kill it. I know for a fact because I used it and it didn't hurt the tall fescue. I'd spray it twice to get it, but that's I hadn't bought it any recently, but it's
what time of year did when the stilt grass was growing?
Yes, yes,
you know, was at its peak.
It wasn't at its peak. I got it right before it was at its peak, but it's hard if it's in your lawn. It's a little hard to identify when things are just greening up good,
right,
particularly Bermuda. So
that would be the
ideal time to get it, but usually it's a little farther along when it jumps up ahead of everything else, and you're like, damn.
Where do you buy a claim?
Well, you'd probably have to have a pesticide. You'd have to get somebody.
Oh, you'd have to have,
you'd
get
probably have to get
it.
Somebody
okay.
to come spray.
Well, that's,
it. But,
that's probably
but see,
a lot.
That's super expensive. The Fusilade would be.
Yeah,
it's not cheap, but it would be cheaper.
It is. So there are some. I just Googled it real fast, and Fluazifop or Fusilade is running about $60 to $70 a bottle, and the Acclaim Extra is 137.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But I'm with Gerald exactly with you. I would hire somebody to come do it because A, you know that it's make sure they have a pesticide license. If someone is applying pesticides on your property, they have to have a pesticide license in North Carolina. They have to have a commercial pesticide license, and you can ask to see their license.
Yeah, let me see your license. That's true. That should be true of a lot of things.
And when they give you that dazed and confused look, move on to the next person.
You should ask me if I have a license to do this show. That's what I would ask, but
I don't have one. Gerald, thank you for mentioning that. If somebody gives you a dazed and crazed look after you ask for their license to apply pesticides,
don't want to mess with chemicals in a dazed and crazed look.
Yeah, it is self-policing. There are pesticide inspectors in North Carolina that are run out of the NCDA that are there to help consumers and professionals with this. But it really is up to homeowners and businesses to make sure that the people that they're hiring have the proper licensing, because it is so easy to just go out there and get started. But there is a licensing structure, and that's what Extension's here for. I help people almost every day get the proper licensing so they know that they're being safe and protecting their clients.
So Chris Hooks, who is one of the best salesmen I know of, and who luckily works for Curtis Media, is listening this morning. His whole family, they're going to Greensboro. Their son, Cam, is, I guess, a hockey player. So they go into a hockey tournament, and Cam is hoping to score a goal in honor of the weekend gardener. So I appreciate that, Hook. So your daddy's a good guy, too. He's the mayor of Mebane, Mayor Hooks over there. So, Chris, appreciate you sending that greeting this morning. Also, Rufus, I wanted to mention something that Melissa is pointing out. The Extension Service in Chatham County is doing a video and thing. It may be on, some of it may be on YouTube now, about the Reeves Farm, which is going to be developed. So it's not a farm. It's beautiful farmland, but it's not going to be a farm anymore, or soon won't be. But my wife grew up there. It's about 500-600 acres. A dairy farm, but the Extension Service did a lot of research on this, and talking about family members and all the stuff going way back. But Rufus, there was a Rufus King Reeves. That's my wife's maiden name.
Oh my goodness,
Rufus King Reeves III. Oldest son.
Well,
Oldest son of
Rufus the King. Yeah.
You should change something there. Go to the courthouse and get your name changed to Rufus King Edmonston Esquire. So he was the oldest son of Elizabeth Early and Makaja Reeves. And the early part, so they were pretty close kin to Jubal Early, who was a Confederate general. And it says in this, and I don't know if this is his obituary or what, but it says he was an exceptionally brilliant student, especially in Latin, Greek, and mathematics. Many of his books were in the home, and he studied his Caesar's commentaries and Virgil's works. So Rufus King Reeves was nominated for the state Senate in the spring of 1948, but he died unmarried in September of that year. So he lived from 1822 to 1848. I thought you'd be interested in that because another Rufus.
I certainly am. There's Jubal Early Ferry up in Berryville, Virginia.
Yeah.
I've been on before, and it was run by one of those old-fashioned cable things.
Right.
I don't know whether it's still there or not, but it was Jubal Early Ferry.
Well, Melissa's father's people came from Surry County, so they were up there close to the North Carolina line anyway with Virginia. So, yeah.
Right.
That's pretty good. Rufus King Reeves III, or Rufus King Edmonston Esquire, either way.
So. Well, let me, there was a man named Rufus King that was a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
I'm wondering if that's the same family.
Who knows? No. I don't know. I don't know where the king came from in what lineage there was. We'll have to delve more into that.
That's really
the
cool.
The Reeves family they over the years compiled this very extensive book on the Reeves family, and the Reeves members did. So a lot of research is going on. Self-serving, but I thought it'd be interesting.
No, that's okay. I've been fortunate enough, Mike, to have been to visit the Reeves farm on several occasions, and it's wonderful.
We'll talk about that coming up here on The Weekend Gardener.